everyone. This is Jamie DiPolo. I'm the senior editor here at breastcancer.org. Welcome to the latest edition of our podcast. We're going to be covering some research news stories today. And our guest, as always, for our research news podcast is Dr. Brian Wojciechowski, who is the breastcancer.org medical advisor. Welcome, Dr. Brian. How are you today?
I'm very well, Jamie. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So we've got four studies we're going to talk about today. I think they're all very interesting, and they also have some pretty practical applications. The first one was a study that came out in November, just toward the end of November, and it was on calcium channel blockers, which are a high blood pressure medicine. And the researchers found that these medicines do not increase breast cancer risk. And I'm going to let you explain, Brian, what happened, why there was a study that came out in August of 2013, last year, that said that calcium channel blockers did increase breast cancer risk. So apparently, it seems like these researchers wanted to duplicate that or figure out what was going on.
Yeah, this was a bigger and more reliable study than the prior study that you were talking about. And, you know, there's always confounding factors when you're looking at, you know, association kind of studies like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at one group of women who are on the blood pressure medicine versus the other group who are not on the blood pressure medicine, you know, they might find that the women on the blood pressure medicine have a higher risk of breast cancer. But, you know, women who have high blood pressure are probably more likely to be overweight or diabetic, all of which can contribute to breast cancer risk. So you don't know what's contributing there, and it might skew your results. It might make you think that there's an increased risk from the drug when the increased risk is actually from other factors.
Okay. So do we feel good about these results?
I definitely feel reassured about these results. I mean, there's no mechanism of action by which I can think of that these drugs should cause an increased breast cancer risk. And, you know, with a bigger study, it's certainly more reassuring and more reliable that, you know, that your results are true and not just coincidence.
Okay, so if anybody is a postmenopausal woman who is taking a calcium channel blocker to control high blood pressure, I think you can feel pretty reassured that that medicine is not going to increase your breast cancer risk. But also keep in mind that, as Dr. Brian said, the risk factors for high blood pressure, which include being overweight, not getting enough exercise, smoking cigarettes, and drinking alcohol, are also all risk factors for breast cancer. So if you're doing lifestyle changes to help control your high blood pressure, you're probably also helping to keep your risk of breast cancer as low as it can be. So that's always a good thing. And
exercise is good medicine.
Yes, absolutely. And our second study, I thought this was very interesting. There is a group called the Society for Integrative Oncology, and that group looks at how to make complementary medicine techniques part of the whole healing, the whole treatment plan, and ways to integrate these complementary therapies like acupuncture or yoga or massage in with more traditional Western medicine. And this group looked at, I think it was 90, more than 90 types of complementary therapies and issued recommendations on which ones were helpful or the most helpful for people who've been diagnosed with breast cancer. And they actually gave each complementary therapy a letter grade, almost like you would get in school, from A to D. And then there was an H, and that meant that the therapy wasn't recommended because there was not enough research. And then there was, or no, excuse me, H meant that the therapy does more harm than good, so you should definitely not do those. And I meant that it was incomplete, that there wasn't enough research. Were there any surprises in here for you, Dr. Brian? I know it showed that meditation and yoga and relaxation had the strongest evidence showing that they were helpful.
Yeah, and I think that's consistent with many of the studies we have reviewed in Research News.
Okay.
I was not surprised to see that soy extracts and soy foods get a grade D.
Okay.
There has been some concern about the plant estrogens in soy, although the research has been mixed, but I think it is still wise to avoid those things. You know, and other than that, I think these are good guidelines and provide clinicians with an excellent resource just looking for other ways to help cancer patients cope with their diagnosis and their side effects. I've seen patients benefit from meditation techniques and acupuncture and yoga. So I try to encourage it for my patients. Not everyone is interested in it, and that's fine.
Sure.
But I do support it with the following caveat. You know, patients tend to get into trouble when they're using complementary and alternative medicine in place of traditional Western medicine. That I'm not in favor of. I think the two will go well together, but I don't want to see patients abandoning things like chemotherapy, radiation, hormone therapy for these alternative therapies, because I don't think they'll do well.
Okay. And it's worth noting, I think, too, that most of these complementary therapies, what they are used for, as you said, are for side effects or anxiety and stress, to help somebody feel better about themselves, to manage their stress, to control fatigue, maybe help them sleep better, give them better quality of life, control pain, nausea, vomiting, and neuropathy, excuse me. And even some of them have been shown to help a little bit with hot flashes. So none of them are really shown like, oh, this is going to kill cancer cells.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's good to know. And yeah, and we do get quite a few visitors to our site that tell us that they've been helped quite a bit by complementary therapies, especially yoga and meditation. Those, I would have to say, are the two biggest ones that people talk about. And so if you are interested, if you're experiencing some treatment-related side effects, or if you're having stress or anxiety because of a breast cancer diagnosis, this may be something that you want to check out. But definitely always talk to your doctor, too. Tell your doctor that you're considering these therapies so he or she knows what's going on. I mean, it's just like any vitamins you would take or anything else that you take. You do need to keep your doctor informed about what you're doing so he or she has the whole picture of your treatment.
I couldn't have said it better.
Well, thank you. So our third study, this is also, we've talked about this before, but the evidence just keeps coming in that more women in the United States are choosing mastectomy over lumpectomy as surgery to remove early stage breast cancer. And doctors aren't sure exactly why this is happening, but there seem to be some ideas. Have you seen this in your practice, Dr. Brian?
I have, and this is despite the evidence that is very strong, high-level evidence, that lumpectomy and radiation is just as good, if not better, than mastectomy for early-stage cancer.
Mm-hmm. Do the women in your practice, do they talk to you about why they're making that decision? Do you have any insights as to maybe why this trend is increasing?
I think there's a psychological effect where if the breast is removed, you know, the breast is gone, women feel more reassured by that than if they're keeping the breast that had cancer in it.
Okay.
I think that's the most common reason. Also, you'll notice that younger women tend to opt for mastectomy more often than older women.
Okay.
I guess thinking that, you know, they're going to be alive a lot longer with the breast and they would rather just have it out of sight, out of mind.
Okay. Now, do you think reconstruction choices play a role in that at all?
I think so. I think without good reconstructive options, more women would probably choose lumpectomy.
Okay. Because I didn't know if, you know, if a woman decided, you know, she was going to have reconstruction and maybe she thought she could achieve better reconstructive results if she had a mastectomy versus a lumpectomy. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure that is the biggest factor that goes into it.
Okay.
I think it's just that, the whole out of sight, out of mind thing.
Okay.
But, we always have to remember that whether the breast is there or not, if breast cancer comes back, it doesn't always come back in the breast. Sometimes it comes in the bone or the liver or the lungs or that sort of thing. So even with a mastectomy, that is not 100% guarantee.
Okay. And certainly the type of surgery that anyone has is a very personal choice, and there's really no right or wrong answer. It's whatever is right for you and your unique situation. But we do at breastcancer.org encourage everyone to talk to your doctor about all your treatment options, just so you have all the information in front of you and can make the most informed decision. You know, it's good to keep in mind that mastectomy and double mastectomy are bigger surgeries than lumpectomy, so it's a longer recovery time. But on the other hand, if you think that you're going to get greater peace of mind from one surgery over another, then maybe that is the best choice for you. But it's just interesting that this trend keeps continuing because I know we talked about a story like this, I think about a year or a year and a half ago. So the
Yes.
trend just it keeps growing.
Yep. And we probably do more mastectomies than we really have to.
And then our last story we're going to talk about today. There's a new experimental targeted therapy called olaparib, and some research suggests that it could help treat people who've been diagnosed with advanced stage cancer. And there's several types of advanced stage cancer. It would be breast, ovarian, pancreatic, or prostate. If that cancer is because the person has an abnormal BRCA gene, then this targeted therapy, olaparib, may help. And so, Dr. Brian, if you could just explain a little bit what olaparib is and how it works and why it seems to be so helpful for people with this abnormal gene.
So, when someone has an abnormal BRCA1 or 2 gene, that means that they're not very good at fixing DNA damage. Because that's what the BRCA1 and 2 functions as normally, to repair DNA damage. So, this drug, olaparib or olaparib, depending on how you want to pronounce it,
Oops, I've probably been pronouncing it wrong my whole life and I didn't know.
I'm not sure. I just kind of say it however these drugs are very difficult, and I just try to say whatever rolls off the tongue easier.
And this is just the chemical name too. If it does get on the market, it will probably have a brand name that will be completely different. So,
That's exactly right.
okay,
So
but go ahead, sorry.
it's a PARP inhibitor, and PARP is an enzyme involved in DNA damage repair, and we believe that by inhibiting this enzyme, it makes it less likely that those cancer cells could survive because of the damage to DNA. Now, the PARP inhibitor story goes way back. A couple years ago, there was a lot of excitement about a PARP inhibitor study that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the big medical journal. And it was in phase two, and as you know, phase two is sort of a preliminary type of study. When it went to phase three, it didn't pan out. So that was a big disappointment for all of us. So, we've kind of been burned on this one in the past, and this study is still a phase two study, so
Okay.
it's considered to be preliminary, and we won't really have a good final answer until they complete a phase three study. But hopefully the drug has finally found its niche. It's an exciting drug because it's a pill. It's not like an IV chemotherapy.
Okay.
So, convenience for the patient is going to be a big thing. I and all of us in the cancer community are very hopeful that this drug pans out and will be useful for our patients, because if I think it did, it'll be a major game changer.
Okay, and especially too, it seems like because it is aimed at treating advanced stage cancer, we have comparatively fewer treatments for advanced stage than we do for early stage. Is that a fair statement? Fewer new ones. It seems like there are fewer new treatments being found for advanced stage disease.
Well, you know, lately we've had some interesting developments with HER2 positive disease with the introduction of Perjeta or pertuzumab, which is being used in early and advanced stage.
Okay.
You know, usually these drugs are first developed in advanced stage disease.
Okay.
Before they can go on, you know, they have to be proven in advanced stage before they can go on to early stage.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, so I'm completely wrong. I take it back.
Well, you know, so there's a lot of new drugs in the pipeline. You know, we haven't had a whole lot of big developments in early stage recently, but, you know, all these drugs have to prove themselves in late stage first.
Okay.
And then they move on to early stage.
And you, as you mentioned, this study that we're talking about was a phase 2 study. Do you think that the results were promising enough that this will go on to a phase 3 trial for olaparib?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Have you heard anything about when that might start, or is that still, is it still too premature?
Not specifically. I haven't heard anything specifically, but hopefully we'll find out something at San Antonio this year.
Okay. Yep. That starts next week. And I'll just give everyone a little teaser. Make sure you keep listening and keep checking out our website, because we're going to be doing some podcasting about things presented at San Antonio next week. So we will strive to get you information as soon as we have it. So thank you so much, Dr. Brian. Those are our 4 studies for today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And as I said, make sure you tune in or check out our website next week, which would be the week of December 9th. We will be broadcasting about San Antonio. So again, thank you, Dr. Wojciechowski. Have a good week.
You too.